You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. I'm Simon from York.
And I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska. We were attacked! We're attacked! Actually, it's not that bad. It's only raining today. Simon from York. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, thanks.
So, what's it like with Simon Says eating a York peppermint patty?
Sorry, what's a York peppermint patty?
Well, you ever watch the Charlie Brown, you know, Peanuts gang? They called one of the girls Peppermint Patty, but she's named after a little chocolate minty thing called Peppermint Patty.
I get never heard of that.
Oh, okay. I watched a couple YouTube videos. There's this British guy, this English guy, who goes around between American food and the British counterpart for like McDonald's and Pizza Hut and so on. And he compares foods between the two, and it's really kind of interesting watching this guy. You ever watch TV, watch this guy eat, you know, that's entertainment. But he actually does the difference between the two, and it's kind of funny what you guys have. Do you have any Dr. Pepper there?
Yeah, we do have Dr. Pepper.
Oh, you just don't have RC.
Dr. Pepper is not hugely popular, but you can find it.
Mm. All right. So that is interesting. So, Simon, how you doing, bud?
Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, tell us what's up with you lately. It's been a while since you've been on. It's been a while since we've been on. So
yeah, well, November, second child is due. So that's exciting.
Wow, do we know what we're having?
We think it's going to be a boy.
Okay.
So that's the second boy, right?
Yes. Now we'll have two boys. James and whatever we call the next one.
Oh, that was nice.
No doubt.
Yeah. Hey, why not? Yeah, call him Lou. Don't kill him like that. I don't know, what's a loo like over... I mean, isn't the loo what you guys go potty in? So, I don't know if that would really be a nice thing to call him.
No, but we still have... I mean, Lou, I assume your full name isn't just Lou, three letters,
nope,
right?
Lewis.
So it's going to be short for Lewis or Louis or whatever it happens to be. So we still have names. Lewis is a perfectly reasonable name. Louis is a perfectly reasonable name. It's... we still have people called Lou. In the same way we have people called William and Richard and stuff, and it's fine. We don't make fun of these people.
Okay. Well, yes, but how many of them share the name with the toilet? Just me, that I know of. So, Simon, we last had you on for Identity Crisis. And that was, I think, back in December.
Well, doesn't time fly? I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't seem that long ago.
Mm-mm. No.
I could have sworn we knew about the number two at that point.
But I thought so too.
Yeah, but that can't make sense. Mm-mm. Because unless it's like a Naomi Wildman kind of pregnancy here, my maths are suggesting that that's not possible.
No, it wouldn't be. No, it wouldn't be, would it? Okay.
I don't think I mentioned it back then.
We'll have to...
I can't remember what I said then on that episode, but I don't think...
No, I just seem to remember us having had the conversation with the number two was due at some point. And I don't think it was like, you know, last December, you saying, hey, Lou and James, do you know what, I'm getting ready to start trying again for another child. So maybe either my memory is completely gone or Lou's space-time continuum calculations are off.
No, I think it was somebody else. Because now that I'm thinking about it, it was somewhere in the at the end of the season, close to the end of the season. They're not even sure if they can make it because maybe it was Chris.
I mean, Chris has a large amount of fertility that he spreads around, as no doubt do all of our listeners. But I thought that we had heard from Simon as well.
Okay.
Anyway.
I don't know, maybe.
We can move on.
All right, so Simon's here for hero worship, huh?
So who drew the short straw here?
Yeah, no kidding. I don't know what happened there. But we were talking offline that I'm actually not even prepared for this episode, so Doc's taking it. And I did the last one, New Ground, thinking it was going to be this one. But, you know, actually, if you think about it, Doc, last episode where we discussed New Ground is probably...
Yeah, I remember it.
Yes, yes. It's probably going to be one of the shorter episodes. But see, you don't know why yet, because you're not hip on the temporal mechanics of how this works.
Well, I find it strange that you're referring to something that happened in the past and the future tense. So mm-hmm. I'm really confused here.
Mm-hmm. Well, because if you remember correctly, there's not much to talk about. There really isn't much to talk about. I mean, the Alexander comes aboard. He's a little brat. There's a soliton wave. There we go. That's pretty much it. That's the whole episode in a nutshell. They test a wave. It doesn't work. They have to go through it and save the Gilvos and. I can't think of much more to talk about. Well, I can't think of much more that we talked about.
Oh, I seem to remember that Brian went on for ages about a large number of issues.
You think he will? I mean, he did.
Hmm.
Oh, okay. Well, let's hope so. See how much of it gets recorded, because I don't remember much. It just wasn't much to it. This one, on the other hand, we've got some things to talk about. So why don't we go ahead and continue on with that script so we can get headlong into... We were attacked! We were attacked! God, Simon.
The synopsis for tonight's show is... Data helps the only survivor of a wrecked ship, a child, cope with the loss of his parents. Meanwhile, the crew investigates the cause of the wreck.
That's a terrible punctuation that's been put in that sentence. That's really dreadful. The guys on Memory Alpha should be ashamed of themselves. Mm. Now, apologies, Simon. Carry on.
This is the 11th episode of Season 5 of Star Trek The Next Generation. The original release date, January the 27th, 1992. Written by Hilary Bader with teleplay by Joe Manosky and directed by Patrick Stewart. Guest stars include... Joshua Harris as Timothy, Harley Venton as Hutchinson, Sheila Franklin as Ensign, Stephen Ensifar as Teacher. So what do we all think about this episode?
Simon, what do you think about this episode?
Well, it's an interesting one. I'm a big fan of Data, but... Children in episodes has never been one of my favourites. So it'd be interesting to see if my kind of views on children centric episodes has changed now I've got children of my own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, to be honest with you, I think you end up hating them more because everyone loves their own children, but then you realise how bratish other kids are compared to your own. So yeah. Okay. Actually, I was just looking up. The guy that plays Timothy is—he's older than me. Interesting.
Really?
Yeah.
Fascinating.
What I wanted to do, I wanted to see whether he worked again, just because. You know, that'll be good. And it looks like he's worked again.
Okay. Well, yeah, you can't blame him for, we were attacked. Basically, what do you, I mean, how about PTSD? I mean, don't you think he's pretty much got the classic signs of trauma?
I don't think this episode is a particular, you know, comprehensive study in PTSD as shown through a pre-adolescent child. So, you know, you would imagine that this guy has serious, serious, serious issues. And all they seem to do with him is put him into school and start complaining when he spends too much time with the Lego. And I, you know, they're not prepared to treat any of the issues in this episode seriously. And, you know, as a result, neither am I. Apparently, the guy did quit acting. He quit acting in 92. So now I feel bad. When he was 14.
Well, maybe he thought he destroyed his own career too.
I mean, he wasn't hugely bad, right? I think that they try to put too much onto him, in particular, kind of like the final kind of, you know, reveal scene when it's the I caused everything to blow up. It was all my fault, and that kind of a what's supposed to be a kind of, well, what I would imagine can only be described as an emotional meltdown. You know, he's not experienced enough to carry that. He's not able to carry that in this particular show. And then you can even ask the questions: Why would you want him to carry it? Right? Does this episode inherently become better because the guy's going to have a big breakdown at the end? I didn't think so. I think that if you want to make this a study of, you know, people finding a way of being able to deal with certain things. Similar to the, you know, the what's the Worf episode with his, when he gets his, you know, the guy, the Bonden, I think it is, when he gets that guy attached to him. You don't have to have this kind of big emotional breakdown. And I think that when they went in this direction, it was just not, it wasn't a good enough performance to carry that kind of thing.
Because, you know, I didn't think he did all that bad. The fact that he's holding this in, because he thinks if he gets caught because it was his fault, he believes it was his fault, and he doesn't want to get in trouble for it, and he feels, like, terrible because it's his fault. And eventually, you know, they told him when they confront him that, you know, Tim, it's obviously you're lying. We could tell that you're lying. Nothing that you're saying makes any sense. So what really happened? And that's when he comes to claim that, well, I pressed a button. Well, you know, and then they need to help him. I thought he seemed to do pretty good. He just didn't want to get caught. In other words, he was lying through the whole thing with guilt. That's how it came to me.
No, I mean, I think that's where they want to be for that particular part of the story. But if you look back of, you know, what is this episode really trying to say? Or what is it trying to kind of bring in? It's trying to bring in that, you know, someone's got a lot of trauma, or someone's got a lot of emotions going through them. They then see someone that is emotionless and he's deemed to be better than them, and then they kind of hero worship them, pardon the pun, to the extent that they, you know, start behaving and start acting like them. And, you know, there's a little bit of fun that can be played there. They could have gone for more laughs and so on. I don't think you necessarily needed the child to be, you know, to believe that he's blown up the ship, or to be so kind of emotionally entrenched in, you know, something going wrong. At one point that I do have a little bit later on is that, once again, we've got this, you know, we've got a, how old is this guy? He's like a, supposed to be like a 12-year-old, 13-year-old boy or something like that, who is going through huge trauma, whose emotional levels are kind of through the roof. And Troy can't feel that something is wrong. I mean, there's a point where he says, oh, I think he's being lying, but perhaps he's been too emotional. And you think, what on earth is Troy doing in this episode? It should be extremely clear to anyone what this guy is going through, and in particular an empath. Anyway, I'll leave my Troy around for a little bit later.
Okay. Okay, so they find him aboard this ship that's been pretty much destroyed. They thought everyone was destroyed, right? Until they finally find him?
That's right, yeah. And this is, they head off into a quote unquote black cluster. And at this point, I got kind of, I don't know exactly what a black cluster is. And then they mention it a little bit later, which is just a whole bunch of protostars that have collapsed in on themselves. So it's not a particularly nice place to be, but I don't think it really exists out in the boy. It's not a kind of thing, as far as I'm aware.
Okay. So would you have felt better about it, and Simon, just jump in anytime you want to say something, but would you have felt better about it if it was a man and his son that was rescued, with the son trying to imitate Data and the man believing that it was his fault that this whole thing occurred? Kind of like the same story, but only two people. Because, quite honestly, I didn't like the whole I'm an android thing. I mean...
Well, one of the biggest problems with this episode is they just abandoned Timothy for loads of it. It's every time you've got either Troy or Data, and they find Timothy alone in his quarters. It's just...
I thought that too. I do remember
the amount of child abuse that's going on here, in particular for someone who's supposed to be in distress, is quite astonishing. I think that there's a bit where Picard does his log and he says that, you know, we've begun counseling the boy already, and then they kind of pan back to a shot in sick bay, and what there is that there's Timothy on a bed. He might as well be restrained. Directly above him, there's a white light shining into his face, and there are three unknown or, you know, unusual adults standing over him. I mean, that doesn't sound like counseling. That sounds like torture. And very quickly after that, he gets thrown into school. I feel that they were... I think they were ill-advised to take this route of having an emotionally distraught boy somehow... having to kind of make this connection to Data. And to be honest with you, I also think that I think if they wanted to play off the kind of hero worship like thing, they could have done it in a more subtle way than to have the guy wandering around and talking to Troy, claiming that he is an android and we don't have any emotions, us androids. I mean, it doesn't take a deep thinker to realize what's going on here and why he's choosing to block things out.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so hold on. You know, I'm lost, so I'll be honest with you. I just lost it. I don't know where I'm at here.
So let me ask a question, because you we first see the rescue that takes place. They find the boy on the Vico, and they try to beam him over, and I kind of, at the back of my mind, I thought, it's a good thing that this isn't Chief O'Brien, because that ensign does a real half-assed job of actually getting the guy over. He attempts to beam, and it's like, oh no, sorry, we can't beam him there. And they obviously have to set up the point where Data comes in, and he lifts the thing out of the way, because he's so much stronger than humans. But as they were beaming out, I was thinking, what's actually the state of an individual as they're being beamed? Because it looked like there was a whole load of stuff powered up onto the boy, and when they beamed him out and he was half materialized, that didn't like fall through the body. And maybe that's the locked field thing that goes around the beaming. But I was a little bit worried that as they had half taken the guy out, the entire thing would collapse into his body, just for him to rematerialize into the rubble.
That's an interesting point. I never thought of that before. Because they do try to beam him out, and you can see him. Part of him's on the bio bed, while the rest of him is still on the other ship. So why doesn't the bulkhead just go right through him?
And also, he's pinned down under all that stuff, and he's able to just run as soon as Data lifts the stuff. He's not injured in any way. It seems a bit hard to... believe he was actually pinned there for hours.
I don't think he was really pinned. He was just sitting there going ooh doo 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 doo, doo, waiting for someone to pop by. I like the way that Data, he I think the boy says to him, what, you know, you're gonna lift that? And then Data resists, he resists going back to him and saying, him, yeah, yeah, I'm going to lift that. I said, well, how can you lift it? It's so heavy. Data should have turned around and says, I work out.
Mm.
And that's it. He didn't have to go through the, I'm an android. I have strength, you know, multiple times that of a human.
Yeah, we ain't got time for all that. But here's another thing. Why, when he lifts that beam, all of a sudden things start falling? I mean, it makes no sense. Even in another room, they get to another room when they get up the steps. As soon as they beam out, boom, there's another I-beam comes flying down on them.
Yeah, and I mean, in a way, there's not a huge amount of structural integrity that is going to be on the ship, from the ship's perspective, that is going to be supported on a pile of rubble, which a major component of which is a 12-year-old boy, right? So I don't get the idea that as soon as he lifts it up, okay, I can understand that in that particular room, you might knock something else over on one side of the room, but run down the corridor and then the ship starts shaking. Not entirely convinced. Okay. But then you do need the dramatic scene of him running, him then beaming, and as soon as they finish beaming, the thing collapses over their head.
Right. But one other thing I don't remember on this episode, because it has been a while since I've seen it, but why couldn't they beam him out again? I mean, is it just because there was stuff around him? I mean, isn't the ship always around him?
Yeah, absolutely. So in my mind's eye, I always think that you have the transporter beam, and I always think, can the transporter beam choose to like go round a bulkhead through a door and then like through a window, so it doesn't have to go through so much matter? Is it always just a single straight line that can get blocked? So they basically say there's a little bit too much stuff to beam, but because it's not Chief O'Brien on duty, I assume it's really the incompetence of the ensign. And you know, next week things will be fine.
Okay. All right, well, they get him aboard, and then they start asking him about what happened, and he insists that there was some kind of monster in that nebula or whatever that attacked him.
So he had no real reason to lie, by the way. I mean, if we believe the fact that he caused the structure, he believes he caused the ship to explode, he could just say, I don't know what happened. There was a big explosion, and you ended at that. You don't have to invent stuff about boarding parties. You don't have to get a convoluted story in place. Now, maybe he's just trying to come up with something so that people go off in one direction and, you know, try to explain it. But yeah, if you're thinking that from a production perspective, him giving that story brings the viewer into thinking that something exciting has happened, or maybe someone, you know, a cloaked ship's been there and attacked them, and that potentially poses a threat to the Enterprise. I can understand it, but I don't really think they run with that in this episode. And I don't think that, you know, the vast majority of my thought as the Enterprise tries to explore what actually happened in the dark cluster is, why are we here? I mean, you found the ship. Everyone's dead except for one guy. Why are you heading into this place to just make sure that there's not someone there that wants to blow up another ship? You know, leave immediately. There's, you know, I mean, sometimes we can complain about, you don't even separate the source section, really. There's no need for them to be wandering off. And I felt that that was, I felt that the story offered by Timothy wasn't in any way a justification to be kind of hanging around, and I just felt that in the end, Picard was just being, well, dangerous by trying to take them into this more and more silly situation.
Okay. And then we get to hear a story about how Geordi was caught in a fire at one time. So, you know, he's obviously trying to relate to Timothy's experience.
And yeah, this was a little bit strange because it's somewhat out of nowhere. I mean, maybe if they wanted to tell the story of you know, a tragic loss or stress, post-traumatic stress or something like that. They could have had Data try to learn about it and the boy try to learn about it, and you know, maybe they're approaching things by different ends, and somehow they will learn to love each other in the end, and everything is, you know, there's a nice symmetry in the story. But I felt that this was really just a throwaway line of interrogation for Data. It almost seemed as if, and maybe I'm being extremely unkind here, but it almost seemed as if the episode was running short, and they went, well, what can we do? Okay, well, maybe Data should say, hey, Geordi, ever had any stress in your life? And then you think, I mean, surely as a blind person, born blind, the answer must surely be yes, right? But, you know, they have that discussion about I was trapped in a fire and it was before I had my first visor, and it seemed very throwaway from my perspective.
Filler? A little bit of filler, maybe?
I think so.
Okay. But yeah, you know something I never thought, Lloyd, you said earlier, a couple things you brought up is, like, why would they put him in school? I mean, it's like, okay, let's just go ahead and get him back into his normal routine.
He's just lost his parents and he's straight away into school with no kind of counselling or one-to-one attention. It seems very, very strange. And no wonder he's perhaps not fitting in as well as he could.
Go ahead.
No, I do actually have in my notes, why on earth are they sent to the school? I'm pretty sure I've kept my kids away from school just because they had a particularly bad incident with how they made their toast in the morning and they got upset. So this guy losing... I mean, they mentioned that his world has collapsed. He's lost his own world and they're going to have to help him rebuild. Go to school. And then on top of everything else, right, the teacher is so... You know, he's sitting there and he's building his thing and they hassle him about it. It's like, he's not building time now. You have to listen to me read poetry. Get stuffed. I mean, yeah, that boy's, if at face value, that boy's been through more than the teacher has in his life. And being a little bit understanding wouldn't go amiss. No signs
of phaser. Yeah. Another thing is, like you said, why would they give him his own quarters? I can't. I mean, even in DS9, when they have that Cardassian boy that comes aboard with the Bajoran father, I mean, they even put him with the O'Briens, and he seemed older than Timothy was.
I know the episode you're talking about. Although, in complete fairness, they put him with the O'Briens, who at this point, it's a racist old man trying to, doesn't like the Cardassians and. And all of that undertone that also existed in that episode. Mm-hmm. I mean, Keiko's all, oh, we've got a new guest, and I've made you some of this Kardashian sludge. And O'Brien's sitting there going, I love that.
Well, I also like the fact that they pushed their plates together and boom.
And they pinged in the middle.
And they're like, wow. Because he doesn't like Kardashian food either. And Keiko's like, oh, there's good stuff, man. Anyway. Okay. So the Data and LaForge are figuring out that what Timothy's saying doesn't make any sense because there's no phaser burns on the outer hull of the ship like you would normally see. I mean, don't they discover later there's no way they could have even had a cloaked ship in there whatsoever?
Yeah, pretty much... They mention on the bridge that it couldn't have happened the way that he was suggesting, and Troy gets brought into the discussion about why would the guy lie? And this is where they do have the line from Troy saying, "Oh, I don't feel like he's lying." I mean, the guy, if you're a trained counselor, and certainly if you're an empath, you should be able to tell straight away that the guy is trying to deceive, right? He's an emotionally immature child who has lost the entirety of his world and somehow is having, you know, perfect mind control so that even like Spock mind melding with him somehow would be kept from his darkest secrets. I don't buy it. And I think what we really have here, again, is another instance that the story dictates or the character of Troy is too powerful and would immediately unravel this. So what you have to do, you have to write Troy as being stupid. And then it's just a bad reflection on the Troy character, because, you know, Troy should be able to solve this, but can't today, so we just write her as stupid. And it doesn't do anything for Troy's character.
Well, I think she says maybe his emotional trauma level is too high. He doesn't look like he's traumatized too much.
But you're kind of expecting him to have like a Vulcan level of discipline or a Cardassian level of discipline, because the trauma level being too high, if anything, should make it easier to detect.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, you look at your children and like a 5-year-old, you know when they're upset, you know when they're, you know, why they've done things, and you know why they're, when they're deceiving you. I just don't understand how this 12-year-old has Trey wrapped around his finger. And then actually one line that I do love is that Troy basically says, you know, Captain, I really can't be bothered to do any counseling this week. Do you mind if Data does it? And then Picard goes, do you think he would be more inclined to tell Data the truth? And Troy basically goes, yeah, sure, whatever.
Yeah, sure.
And then that's it. And she manages to get all of her responsibilities put across to Data.
Yeah, let him try. I'm really not in the mood today. Alright. So here he is in his own quarters trying to build this structure, and he can't seem to build it right, so Data tries to give him some advice, but angers him instead, and he just destroys his own creation. Maybe...
But the base does appear to be sturdy.
It does. It did. It did appear to be sturdy. But he was trying to build the upper level without all the support in place.
I mean, he was in the second case, but he wasn't originally. So this scene is quite... Let me roll back a little bit here and think that, you know, when I was a child watching this, I probably would have been around Timothy's age, and I like Data, and everyone likes Data, and Data's great because of, you know, because he can do superhuman things, he can do calculations quickly, he can do the thing where he puts together the Lego set very quickly, you know, and has super strength. That's all great, and you want to see that. And as a child that, to a certain extent, relates into Data, you do kind of idolize, and you do think, yeah, that's the way to be. But even as a child, I remember thinking, despite all of that, the last thing I want on Star Trek is an episode during which they basically have a representation of a guy like me going, oh yeah, isn't Data great? Yeah, ooh, look how fast he can build this this tower. And I think that this, the interactions really between Timothy and Data, I mean, I think there are some cases that are okay when they're humorous, but I think as a proper emotional drama, I don't really have a huge amount of time for them.
Okay, and I kind of looked it up, and it looks like that kid was actually born in 1978.
Yep.
So obviously he was like 14 for this episode, but okay, he seemed younger to me. 13, 14. But anyway, he's trying to build this structure, and I got a picture up on the screen. I don't know if you see it, but you see one little support wall on one side of the structure as he's trying to put the next layer up, and boom, it just falls down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe his mind's not in the game. So, anyway. Simon, what about you? What are you thinking so far with this?
It's just another example of they've just abandoned him with that the construction kit. It's just, why is he not being looked after? It doesn't make any sense. And yeah, as soon as Data comes in, he's going to try and latch on, because that's the only kind of contact he's had. It's crazy. Mm-hmm.
Or maybe Miles and Keiko were in the other room. Since they're like foster parents, maybe they're in the other room and we just don't see them here.
Maybe. Now, it's one thing I do now, I'm going to nitpick and question, which is that Okay, so there are two things here. There's the bit where Data talks about him having, you know, more superior attributes than humans, and then Timothy kind of goes, "Oh, so you're better than humans?" And then Data says, "Better is subjective." And then I can't help but think that the correct response from Data is, "But yes, we're better than humans."
Yes.
Because I think it's clearly provable that they are. Now Data does this thing where, in a way, it's good that he does it for Timothy, but then you ask the question about why doesn't he just do this all the time, which is that he goes into turbo mode. And I started thinking, why doesn't Data run places? Why doesn't Data kind of do things fast? Why does he talk and he, you know, why does he talk slowly? Why isn't he just on fast forward all the time? Surely Data can be 10 times, 20 times more productive than he is. And then by the end of this, I was just thinking, Data's just a slacker, right? He's been in Starfleet for like 20 years at this point. He's barely made Lieutenant Commander, and he's basically on a go slow from his perspective. So I kind of like left with a bit of a bad feeling of towards Data here.
I think Data tries to emulate humans. That's what he wants most of all. He wants to be like humans, so that's why he's slow and he talks so that people can understand him, because he's trying to be more human.
So he wants to emulate humans, including an unsuccessful career in Starfleet. I am
ready. Pretty much.
Sure. How are you feeling?
Okay. Well, so, okay, remind me, I think you briefly touched on it, James, but why the hell did they go into this nebula anyway?
They have no explanation for that whatsoever. In my notes, as we're coming up to this idea that, you know, that there are two decisions, I think, that Picard makes around this time that I think are dreadful. One is that, you know, as Troy discovers that Timothy is trying to behave like Data, he basically tells Data, "Hey, you know, why don't you go and nerd out with your, you know, with this particular, you know, guy, and go off and have a decent cosplay at a convention and see how far you can take it?" Which I don't quite see why you'd be. You're your second officer. Oh yeah, you know, go off and play with this dude and make sure that he is the best darn android you can make him.
Yeah,
that seems weird.
It did.
And then the other thing is that I do have in my notes is that I don't think they give a sufficient enough reason to head into the dark cluster, and it seems to be dangerous, and there's no suggestion that they need to solve this now, and I don't think anyone cares. I mean, I certainly didn't care about this B plot, and you know, Worf goes along and, you know, already very, very quickly the sensors start falling over, not working properly. Mm-hmm. They mention that this is the largest of the dark clusters they've ever seen, and they also mention that the science vessel had been properly set up to go into this, which they weren't. So you know, really turn around, head back to a starbase, and make sure someone else can look after this, because it's just stupid what Picard's doing here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and by the way, androids do not need food, but when he sees a tray of food walking by, but I could try some. He is funny. I'm surprised he didn't get some of that white paint or whatever it is on Data's face and just paste it on. He tries to get a little, you know, Data shirt, I call it. So, anyway, so they go into this nebula for God only knows why, and as they're going along, they're encountering stresses on the hull of the ship, right?
Yeah, and things not working and
yeah,
and stuff like that,
right? And so their solution is always to, well, let's increase power to those shields. Oh, that didn't work. Well, let's increase some more power to those shields. That still didn't work.
So there's a really weird bit where, I mean, before that, you get to the end thing where they're being hit by the waves of energy. There's the bit where I think the direct quote here is that Riker, Picard asks for the phasers to come online, and he's going to shoot the phaser, and then, you know, Riker goes, "An experiment, Captain," And you think, well, how the hell is it an experiment? Picard's basically going to start shooting stuff. Well, what? You know, and then it has this weird effect where it like ripples around.
Right. I get that. I get the reason why. It makes sense. They're trying to establish, could a phaser be fired in this nebula and cause damage to a ship as Timothy's describing?
But we have to agree by this point, you turn around. You just don't need to be doing this.
Right. Right. It's almost like they wanted to verify what Timothy was saying. But there's no need.
There's no need to.
All right. But now that he's an android, he's basically, you know, Data's got to teach him how to be the best android he possibly can. He's got to get his hair right. He has to get his mannerisms right. His head tilt right. Everything.
I think some of this stuff is okay, right? When he does his head tilt and it's basically a little bit of a dig at Data to say, hey, are you not aware that you kind of do this and, you know, you're slightly robotic in your mannerisms? And it's a nice thing to note, and it's obviously a bit of a wink to the audience and that, you know, that we've noticed that Data behaves in this way. I think it's nice when he pretends to be tired, well, he has been tired, and he uses the same phrase that Data uses about, you know, I'm designed to, you know, to appear as if I'm tired, when and it parrots something that Data had previously said. And I think that that's a quite nice thing, because again, it almost also, it allows you a little bit of an out from a viewer perspective. There's always this thing where, you know, the natural question to ask is that if Data's an android, why is he 2 stone heavier by the end of Nemesis than from when he started? And that's a valid question. But then you have, they kind of pad around this by saying, oh, it's, you know, he gets old, he appears in that way just because of, you know, that's how he was designed. And I felt that there was a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek reference here, as the boy basically is using the same excuse as he's yawning and has his mouth open wide just before he falls asleep.
Could you imagine them trying to use Brent Spiner now today as Data? I mean, how could he possibly explain the age, his face and everything? It couldn't work.
I mean, it could work, right? I mean, it must have been, it wasn't 20 years, but it was pretty close between Nemesis and the start. But you know, with a bit of makeup, right, things work. I mean, Lou, I mean, are you going to tell me here that when they had the These Are the Voyages season finale or you know, series finale for Enterprise, they done up Riker and Curry, you felt that they weren't in some way exactly how they appeared in season 7?
Yes. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, wasn't he fatter? Okay, yeah, you're right.
I believe it was the same uniform that they managed to squeeze them into.
Well, they squeezed him in it. And then, of course, all good things. You know, Data puts on that old man thing. He had a touch of gray or something. I guess it could happen. All they have to say is, Data, why do you look like you've aged 25 years? And, you know, just look at the camera and go, ha, ha, ha. Oh, well, I've altered my appearance. As my friends get older, I wanted to become older just like them. That'd be funny.
They could technobabble their way out of it by saying he's kind of testing some skin grafts or something that mimic human aging or something. There's ways around it if they really wanted to bring him back.
It's Barclay's fault. So, anyway. Okay, so. Alright, so Data's making him up to be the best android he could possibly be. Did you guys happen to notice Data looking in the mirror? I've got a screenshot if you need to see it, but Data's looking in the mirror like, what does my hair look like?
Yeah, no, I do.
and I'm going to make him up like that, but he keeps tilting his head back and forth. Whatever. Okay, that's too much. That's enough for that. So, but he starts to get a little more information about what's going on. You know, Data, what if? Wait a minute, are you having bad dreams or something? Wasn't it like bad dreams? Are you having disturbing dreams or something?
Yeah, so, I mean, once the, well, once basically the entire duties of the counselor have been just put onto Data, it really doesn't take long at all before he starts opening up and he starts, you know, coming forward with questions. And it's, you know, it's clear that he's suffering, you know, trauma, and he is, you know, asking about, you know, people feeling scared, and then Data, like, you know, answers in his way that, you know, I am unable to feel scared. And he goes, oh, yeah, that's right, yeah, we're unable to feel scared. And then, well, what about dreams? Yeah, and don't they make you scared? Oh, no, I don't have dreams. Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah, we don't have dreams. To be honest with you, this connection with Data, I think, it's formed rather artificially, and it kind of unravels pretty quickly as well, right? It doesn't take long for him to step into these shoes and then step out of them again and, you know, start accepting, quote unquote, you know, the reality of the situation, which from the actual real life perspective of what this guy's been through, that's not going to happen. It's
They do go painting. They do paint together. And from the painting that Timothy made, a little disturbing. But he does fall asleep in Data's quarters, I guess.
Right? No, indeed. I mean, if you wanted to be an android, right, and you managed to get to a situation where a real-life android was with you and, you know, you could be his little mini-me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how far up on the list is... or we could go painting together. I mean, it's pretty low on my list of things to do.
Okay. So, you know, they find out that there's something in this nebula that's almost destroying the ship. But, you know, actually, Timothy did save him in the end, didn't he? You know, just based on what he said, more power. Oh, that's what I heard. More power to the shields. More power.
Okay, so we've got a couple of things that happened. We have, you know, we have the fact that they confront Timothy about how his story couldn't possibly be true.
Right.
He then flips and says, "I admit it. I killed them all." Which, to me, again, I don't understand why Troy's not picking up on this and not doing something. And then they kind of reassure him that actually, no, you couldn't have killed them all, because doesn't Data suggest that every access panel needs a unique code in order for someone to be able to use it, and you could not have pressed the button? And you think the number of times they've been boarded by aliens, and it doesn't take more than someone just going and pressing a few buttons. They always seem to be on. They always seem to be responsive. And didn't Loraxana Troy nearly launch a torpedo into the into the saucer section?
Yeah,
you know, we've seen that the parental controls or whatever the equivalent might be aren't always turned on in the past. So maybe we should take that with a pinch of salt, Data. But we have this thing where the final scenes, as you're kind of building up the tension. First of all, I think the audience is way ahead of the characters on screen. And I don't think it's just because I've seen the episode a lot, but you have you basically have Troy saying that you know, the boy's getting upset on the bridge. Something bad is starting to happen on the bridge. Troy says, "Look, we need to go now." Mm-hmm. The boy says, "Nah, that's okay."
Mm-hmm.
And you think, okay, well, apparently a 12-year-old can overrule an officer on the flagship whilst on the bridge. That's fine. Daisy then takes him to the side. You know what's happening here. You know, we've seen this before. We saw it in Times Squared. We saw it in many of the episodes. There's clearly a feedback coming in, and I think the audience is ahead of Data, and we're certainly streets ahead of Riker when Data says, you know, drop the shields, and it's, "Data, that's suicide!" And you think, how much of a Muppet can Riker be this week? And then they drop the shields, and everyone's happy, and then we all go home.
Yes.
I mean, it was quite painful. Yeah. Sorry, I'm ranting somewhat.
Right, Riker should be number two while Data is number one. That's a good point. I mean, how many years has Riker actually been in Starfleet? He couldn't have been in as long as Data.
No, which is why Data's a slacker.
Yeah.
It's become clear to me.
Hmm. Well, he does get to Captain the Sutherland eventually.
Well, that's in the past.
Well, yeah. But he gets to Captain the Sutherland eventually.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, you know. Okay. So they drop the shields and just coast their way back out of this thing that they never should have went in the beginning. And everybody's great. His parents are still dead. One got sucked out into space. Or is that blown out?
They seem to go through like an unusually gory report, right? It's like, so Timothy was found here. Okay. And his mom was found over here in pieces. And his dad was probably blown up as they shot up the bridge. And then they're going like, interesting. Why is this relevant at all? It seemed to be, yeah. You wouldn't want Timothy to be overhearing it. I'll say that.
Yeah. So they get back out. They get back out of the nebula, and our next shot is row, row, row your boat. And Timothy's not exactly, you know, participating too much, but he's a little boy now again. He's not an android. Sorry, Data. How you feel about that, Data?
Now, there's only one row, row, row your boat scene in Star Trek that I'm prepared to accept and watch in a jolly manner, and it's not this one.
Row, 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 row your boat. Wait a minute. I remember that, but I don't remember where it's from.
It's from The Final Frontier, Star Trek V.
Ah. That's right, okay.
When they
that's right.
The marshmallows.
Marshmallows, yes. That is funny. Okay. But, oh well. He is a boy, and he confesses he does miss his parents.
As you would.
Yeah, I suppose he would. Good boy, good boy. Well, how much did we miss over? Skip over?
I don't think we skipped over anything. This has been very thorough.
Good. Good. Thank you for getting me through it. Alright, Simon, you've been quiet, so do you have anything you need to mention? Yes,
so Simon, did you volunteer to come on for this episode because you liked it, or did you draw the short straw?
I don't know how I ended up on this one.
Really?
I think it was one of the ones that was free, and it was a data-centric episode, and I forgot quite how much it wasn't probably one of the better ones.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not exactly sure how you got it on there either, but that's fine. You're here.
I like Data, and Data's great, and I just don't think this episode really. It doesn't tell you much about Data. Data doesn't. I don't think Data learns much from this. I mean, he's there as a kind of a support to the other character, to the boy. And the boy, to be honest with you, I don't think really learns much either. It's at the beginning of the episode, he must be a horrendous screw-up that has many, many years of counseling ahead of him. And then by the end of it, despite this diverting into I'm going to pretend to be an android for a day and a half, you're pretty much back into the same situation. There's no water. This isn't in any way things like The Offspring or anything like that, where there's a clearer emotional arc for Data to go through as he interacts with someone else, and they have an emotional arc. I feel that this is like extremely cheap and really nothing to write home about.
Yeah, kind of the same. It's yeah. Okay, so since he said that, let's go into our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. Simon, I was trying to go through emails to see at what point did you ask for it, and I don't even see that you did, so I'm not even sure how you got on there. Maybe I just said, hey, let's give this to Simon.
I think it was probably last time I was on, we were discussing, what shows do you want to come on next time, and maybe I just picked this one at random or something.
That might have been. So why don't you go ahead and start us off with your final thoughts and your ratings.
Right, well, we've got this episode, Timothy loses his parents, seems to be abandoned. For most of the episode, he represses his emotions, becomes more and more like Data. I can't really get over the whole kind of how they treat him, really. It's not really showing the Federation that they're caring best, I don't think. So I'm just gonna go for a 3 out of 5, I think.
Okay. 3 out of 5. Okay. I'll go next. Not a very memorable episode, to be honest. I'm not too crazy about Timothy doing the whole Data thing. The investigation seems sloppy. There's no reason to go into this nebula. Troy is eating too much chocolate because it's interfering with her ability to sense what's glaringly obvious from us just based on the look on his face. Data becoming Daddy Data is interesting a little bit. He tries to make him the best android he can. I don't know. I don't think this is really worthy of a 1. I don't. There's some moments in there. There's some, this poor kid does have some post-traumatic stress, especially coupled with the fact that he believes he's the one that did it. So he's just, it's tearing him up inside. He's trying to live, but it's very tough. I don't know. I wonder if they would have left this kid alone if he would have been a suicide. But I don't know. Maybe not. I don't know. I'm thinking 2. I think 2. Not a 3. I don't really see this middle of the road too much. Doc, what about you?
So I was originally going to come in at a 2, but I mean, as I kind of chat throughout this episode with you guys, I'm not sure there are any redeeming features. So I'm going to be coming in at a 1 out of 5. Just because, maybe I'm being unfair. Is it actively painful to watch? I don't know. I really like the Data character. I think that you can have an interesting story here. You can have, you can show humanity and certain aspects of humanity through Data interacting and having this kind of, very innocent, childlike, and actually not even necessarily innocent, by the way. Sometimes I think people always put that onto Data, but things like The Offspring shows that he can have a very kind of well-developed and mature interaction with other people, but you can take him very much as a clean slate and learn things about humanity. I don't see that. Maybe there was a germ of that idea in this particular episode. I don't see that in the executed kind of a thing that ended up on the screen. I think that the main cast of, actually, let me praise a couple of things here. I think Data does fine. Brent Spiner is always good. The boy he's not actively horrendous. I think he's weak in the final scenes when he admits that he killed them all. But, there have been worse child actors turn up on Trek this season. so he's perhaps not that. Yeah, maybe we can give him a little bit of a pass. Although it does look like he did retire from acting this year, and the year in which this episode was filmed. So hopefully Data didn't cause that. I just don't know. I don't feel like there's a huge amount of. I don't have any enthusiasm really to think that this is a good episode, and to think it's anything other than just a it's not even there's a wasted opportunity. It's just it's not anything there. They're not trying to do it. Maybe I was just summarize. I kind of feel like they just failed in everything they tried. Okay, 1 out of 5.
One out of five.
I've been ill, and maybe I'm feeling grouchy. I don't know.
I'm trying to recall when you last gave a 1, and I'm not finding any at all. Oh my goodness.
I've given 1s before.
Oh yeah. The Outrageous Akana, The Dolphin. Oh, The Dolphin, or whatever it's called.
The Dolphin.
Yeah.
I gave The Dolphin 1? That sounds too low. Surely The Dolphin is higher than that.
Well, that's what you gave it.
I don't know what to believe.
Code of Honor was a 1. Hide and Q was a 1. Angel 1 was a 1.
Actually, I didn't like Hide and Q. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And I gave Shades of Grey a 1, so hey, you know.
Actually, sometimes what I do look at in the episodes is that at what point did they kick in from their original kind of introduction to the full blown story? I do specifically remember Shades of Grey. It had a decent 20 minutes at the front, and then it did then descend, and I think it drags a little. But then all that everyone remembers from Shades of Grey is the stupid stuff at the end. I was watching this episode, and I thought the initial setup is okay. You know, there is a little bit of intrigue, there is a little bit of mystery. And one thing I often look at is at what point do they go from this mystery into a full, kind of like, let's go headlong into, hey, the dude is going to pretend to be Data and let's all have some fun. And that happens very, very early in this episode. So that's also like another mark against this episode. They don't like hold any suspense for very long.
Okay.
Because I certainly don't care in any way, shape, or form about what they're doing with the what they're doing with the B plot.
Okay. All right. Well, Simon, hey, thank you for coming on. I don't see you anywhere in my list for the remainder of the season. So we'll have to get with you on for season 6. I'm not sure when we'll put that out. But, all right.
Yeah, it's been good.
So is there any way you would like people to contact you for anything? If they want to, like, bring you on their show? Or do you have a Twitter or anything you want to plug? Any podcasts that you're into or anything?
I'm FunkySci1701 on Twitter if people want to get in contact. I try and listen to most of the TrekMate family podcasts. So, I love what everyone's doing. So I don't comment as much as I used to on the forums or stuff, but I do listen. So.
Cool. All right, then. Well, you take care, and thank you for coming on.
Something evil is invading the crew's most private thoughts.
She's more than ill. She's in a coma.
And suddenly, memories from the past become horrifying nightmares.
You killed her.
We have investigated every possible cause we could imagine, and we have found nothing.
Can no one stop the madness? Or will everyone's nightmare end in death on Star Trek The Next Generation?
So everybody join us next time as we review episode 12 of season 5, and that will be Violations. Violations. I don't quite remember that, James.
It's old Troy. So it's the Mind Rape Troy episode.
Oh, okay. Okay. Now I know what you're talking about. Okay. Well, then join us then, guys, and he'll tell you all about it.
Yeah, okay. Has this season kind of driven off a cliff?
It has.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Maybe James two ones in a row. Who knows? We'll find out next time, won't we, guys? Take care and good night.
Good night.
Say goodnight, Simon.
Oh, goodnight.
Goodnight.